are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, June 20th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Democrats pull out the stops. Two stops. The Senate healthcare debacle. And today will be the day we find out if John Ossoff will be the Republicans' Scotty B.
Dude, he could not do that, just even as a person.
Wait a second. Would he be the...
He'd be the Democrats' Scotty B.
The Democrats' Scotty B. Exactly. Thank you. Meanwhile, the drums of war are beating in Syria and Afghanistan. Actually, the war is beating. And another top one, two, three reason why not voting based on the Supreme Court is for dummies. SCOTUS takes a major gerrymandering case, one which make it virtually impossible for a second party or even a third party from beating Republicans in the future.
Brand new deal.
State insurance regulators are getting a bit sentimental. Meanwhile, Robert Mueller has hired an expert witness flipper. Trump administration, speaking of flipping, just flipped sides in a major labor arbitration case. They are now arguing against their own National Labor Relations Board. And 2 years after Seattle's minimum wage hike, employment has been devastated in Washington State. I'm sorry, unemployment has been devastated. It's at a historic low. Also, lastly, will climate change make Phoenix impossible? Oh, and one more piece of good news. Banks set to pass new, less stressful stress tests, awarding $30 billion to all of you lucky major shareholders in those bank stocks. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, we are back live. Of course, Michael was here yesterday. On Thursday and Friday of last week, if you have not listened to the interviews we did then, you're making a big mistake, ladies and gentlemen. Duff McDonald told a great tale of just what is coming out of Harvard Business School and why that's problematic. Also, on Friday, we had K. Sabeel Rahman, who is a Brooklyn law professor, very smart guy, and there is a, and we have touched upon this a little bit, obviously not as much as we would have had Hillary Clinton won the election, because there's obviously, it's a different playing field, and in many respects, it's a different game, but we have touched on this idea of antitrust, and he extends this this idea and, in fact, revives a lost thread of progressivism. I guess you could argue liberalism from the antitrust robber baron era. And it's really fascinating, really worth a listen. Also on that program on Friday, Senator Al Franken, and I think it was a pretty good interview. I don't know. I made him laugh a couple of times, so that was pretty fun. If you haven't caught up with those interviews, you're missing out, I should say. Not meeting out. I don't know what you're doing with your meetings. That should be the way I roll into that ad for what do you call it? Breather. But
did you notice that Ro Khanna, we'll talk about it more, but he's talking about the Amazon Whole Foods acquisition from the antitrust perspective. So he seems to be pretty on it.
Well, the whole argument is also one of expanding the definition or returning to a definition of freedom that means that you are freed. You have freedom not just from so-called government control, but from the control exercised by monopolies.
Right.
And that to create that level of freedom, you actually have to have government structure the playing field in a more rigorous way so that they don't necessarily have to come in and be a highly interventionist umpire, if you will. So and this came up during the course of the conversation, but I don't know if people recall this. In the wake of the financial crisis, there was a very big argument as to what should be the response from a government intervention. What should the government intervention in a clearly broken part of the economy be? Some were arguing for Dodd-Frank, which allows for the regulatory apparatus to make determinations on a broad set of goals that lawmakers have. Make the banks more stable, says the lawmaker when passing the law, and then giving the authority to agencies like the SEC or the FTC or the Fed or whatever it is to regulate in such a way, come up with regulations that will finesse this. And he refers to that as managerial liberalism. There was another line of thought during that era, some of which came out of Occupy. There was one of the most impressive Occupy documents that came out was from there. I think it's the Banking Committee. I'm not sure which one it was. But they did an incredibly impressive document that blew people away across the spectrum. And they were arguing for a larger structural change. You impose a 21st century Glass-Steagall apparatus, and then you don't have to go in and be so micromanaging because you have eliminated the threat from the beginning, which is that there could be a systemic threat. So, is your button on? Gotta check on that. Picking up something. But so that's it. Go back and listen to that case of Bill Rahman. Fascinating interview. And his book is a little pricey, sadly. It was one of those big publishers. And so, I don't know, we put a link to his website where there's a lot of related information. Meanwhile, if you are like me, a small business owner, then you know that mailing a lot of stuff can be a pain in the butt. Look, I don't even like to leave my office for lunch. I don't. I mean,
it's true. It's
I disturbing. Barely leave this seat over the course of the day because I'm doing a 20 different things. And Stamps.com is so convenient that I'm actually contemplating doing direct mail stuff again. When we started this, I had it. I did not have a Stamps.com account at the time, and it was a huge pain in the butt sending out all sorts of T-shirts and DVDs or whatever it was, bringing them, putting them in, and then going one by one, getting the postage from the post office. I'd have to go in with a big garbage bag full of packages because I would save up. I wouldn't do one at a time. I would wait. Well, Stamps.com lets you buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Simply click print mail and you're done. Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for your letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. They'll even send you a digital scale. And you know how that scale works. It will automatically calculate your exact postage, help you decide the best class of mail based upon your needs. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. And now you too can enjoy Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Majority Report. That's Majority Report. That's Stamps.com. Enter Majority Report. Stamps.com. Never leave your office again. All right, let's get into what's happening here. Understand, as I guess I don't know if we fully predicted this a couple of weeks ago, but the Senate looks like they're going to come together, or the Republicans are, on a bill. And this is what the schedule is for the Senate Republicans. Agree on a bill this week. Have the CBO score it by early next week. Vote on it by next Thursday. Do you understand what we're talking about? Like a 9-day timeline for something that will impact 1/6 of the economy, which, if it's anything like the CBO score from the House, and it could be worse, will kick 24 million people off of health insurance. Not to mention, which I think is very difficult to predict, how many millions of people, and I'm talking over 24 million. I think it could be anywhere from 50 to 70 million people will have their insurance from their employers degraded because of the whole waiver situation. The waiver situation basically allows employer-based insurance to travel because of a change in regulations that took place under Obamacare, where they weren't concerned about differing standards from differing states because there was a floor that was national. Now, your company in New York could essentially use the standards set by a waiver state, call it Alabama if you want, as the basis of their health insurance. Now, why would they do that when they have to compete against other large corporations? Because all of these corporations will feel a fiduciary pressure from their shareholders to go and get the lowest cost insurance they can. So I think it could mess up millions upon millions of healthcare. So here is what the Democrats, it is exactly like a race to the bottom trade deal. That's exactly what it is. It is, and you can imagine the waiver is like the drain. And the plug is pulled there, and the water from all across the bath is ultimately going to head right down that drain. So how can we stop this destruction of our health care? There is really only one way, and that is to get the American public to engage in the way that they were engaging 2 or 3 months ago. And so the only way to do that is, frankly, to have time after the CBO scores it to tell the American public just how bad this is. And then to scare Republican senators, and you only need 3 to crash this thing. And so there was a question, what would Democrats willing to do to elongate the time between the CBO score coming out and the vote? There is a 4th of July break. They're going to go on break for a week, maybe a week and a half, I think. McConnell wants to vote on this before then. So CBO score comes out the beginning of next week. He wants to vote within a day or two, because then senators will not have a time to find out just how much their constituents hate this because the constituents won't have time to find out just how horrible it is. Because once the CBO scores come out, that's when you start seeing media. So there was a question. Would Democrats basically go nuke style on this? What is nuke style? It is withholding unanimous consent. It is larding up with amendments. You can't attach these amendments because it's going to be a reconciliation process, but you can offer them. And when you offer them, you talk about them. And when you talk about them, you eat up time. And this is literally a stalling tactic. It is like, the only thing I could tell you is that there were in cricket, right? Like, you know, in baseball, you can't stall. Well, I guess basketball would be the best example.
Basketball, you could run out the clock, yeah.
Basketball, you can run out the clock. And in some respects, this is like a basketball game that the team that is short one player is trying to just get a tie or really keep the other team from breaking, I don't know, 80 points. I don't know. There's no perfect metaphor for this, but I think you get the dynamic here. You've got to stall so that when the CBO bill comes out, there is literally not enough time to vote before vacation. And then use that vacation time to make sure that people get the word about the CBO. So Democrats started that off yesterday with a talkathon. And here is Kamala Harris's foray into the talkathon.
I've met folks all across California and this country, and they see what's happening. They know that if this bill were as wonderful as its proponents would like us to believe, it would be out in the open. The American people deserve greater transparency. But even though the authors of this proposal have tried to conceal the details of their plan, we know enough to know this bill would be nothing short of a disaster. We know because we've been told that it's about 80% the same as the bill that was passed by the House, a bill so catastrophic that even the President of the United States, who hailed its passage, now calls it, quote, mean. We know that it would throw 23 million Americans off their health insurance within a decade, including putting 4 to 5 million Californians at risk of losing coverage. We know it would raise costs for middle-class families and seniors. In every county of California, average monthly premium costs would go up, while financial support to pay premiums would fall. We know it would put Americans with pre-existing conditions at risk and leave people who need maternity care or opioid treatment without coverage or force them to pay huge out-of-pocket costs. We know it would cut about $834 billion from Medicaid, which means less money for families to pay for nursing homes, to support children with special needs, or to treat substance abuse.
Yeah, well, it actually may end up cutting out more from Medicaid. But we don't know. I mean, it really does show you how effective a strategy can be when you simply hide it. And I have seen some commentary that suggests, like, don't Republicans realize that eventually their constituents are going to see what's in this bill and they're going to be pissed? And I just don't think they care. I mean, I think we are, their constituents in some respects are just do not get the connection in many respects, because I don't think it's just a question of people voting against their best interests. I'm a little more suspect of these days, but I just don't know that people see the connections between these things. And And we'll get to this in a moment. I want to play, well, let's get to this now. Here's another reason why the Republican Party may not be too concerned about it. Are they concerned somewhat that, you know, maybe it'll cost them some seats? Yes. But I think I've said this before. For a guy like Mitch McConnell and for a guy like Paul Ryan, and frankly, for their caucuses, to sell the idea of being the first Republican Congress and Senate to be able to implement permanent tax reform in 40 years. Think about this. In 40 years, this is what they were born for. The last time we had permanent tax reform in this country, permanent, was during Ronald Reagan's era, was during the Reagan administration. You'll recall that George Bush's tax cuts sunsetted 10 years out. They don't want that to happen this time. They want this to be permanent. Contemplate this. In 1985, I think it was, maybe it was 86, when they passed the last set of permanent tax reform. Contemplate what 40 years was then. You go back 40 years from 1986, you're talking about, you know, the end of World War II. Just to place it like in the context of how historic this is. I mean, for us, of course, we perceive it as this is cruel and ridiculous. And taxes are already way too low. Historically lower than where they've been in this country. But for a guy like Paul Ryan, who was literally masturbating to this in his college dormitory room, I don't know, literally.
I worked myself up into quite a lather about it.
I mean, I don't know if he was literal. I'm sure there was other elements.
No, there was a literal. There was also this element of, like, you know, those old ads with where they'd be like, here's this kid starving in Indonesia or whatnot and give him pennies. It actually used to make me hard. I didn't understand. Looking at that kid rooting around for garbage just made me happy.
I mean, this is a historic thing for them. And so the calculation is this. They will get it through the Senate if they can. If they can. This is the only place where it may be difficult. And right now, it doesn't look too good. Then it goes to conference. Then they hammer out another bill. Now, there's two ways this can get derailed after that. One, they can't come out with a bill that everybody's going to vote for. I think that's unlikely. The other is that, I don't know, we win two elections, Ossoff and South Carolina. I mean, it's unlikely. They don't have a huge margin in either house. But when they come out of conference, and chances are they will, they're going to have so much momentum, and the pitch is going to be this. Guys, we're going to have a chance, and I do mean guys, we're going to have a chance to be the first people since Reagan, since St. Reagan, to pass permanent tax reform. Yeah, but I may lose my job. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. But you'll have done something. Because if you don't do anything, if you don't repeal Obamacare, they're going to vote you out anyways. And here's the other thing. Right now in Wisconsin, in terms of Republicans maintaining their majority in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin state legislature, or as of, I guess, a day or two ago, was ordered by a lower court to create a new redistricting plan by this fall in their congressional districts. Because it was found that they gerrymandered them to such an extent that it was unfair. Put aside race for a moment. We've had a couple of those resolved, right? In North Carolina recently by the Supreme Court. This is different. The Supreme Court yesterday put that order on hold and said, we're going to review this case. Now, the Supreme Court has a history of reviewing partisan gerrymandering. And as you know, this is the way it works out. State legislature controlled by one party or the other. If it's a census year, like following 2010, they use those numbers and they gerrymander. Back in the day, you used to say, like, you would go to a state senator and say, Bill, what do you want? Well, I need that neighborhood and I need that neighborhood because that neighborhood generally goes for me. In 2010, and we interviewed, I can't remember his name, David Dagan, was it? Not Dayan, Dagan, on his book, Rat Fucked. And it talked about how in 2010, with increases in technology, there was such hyper gerrymandering that it locked in a lot of seats across
the country.
David Daly. And in 2004, the court looked at this question of partisan gerrymandering. It was a 5-4 decision, basically arguing that the court can't overrule gerrymandering. However, there were four justices, Scalia, Rehnquist, Sandra Day O'Connor, and Clarence Thomas, that agreed the court should never review a question of partisan gerrymandering. There were four liberal ones, Stevens, Ginsburg, Souter, and Breyer, who said that it can. There was a fifth justice who was the swing vote who said, well, the court can if we can ever find a way of doing it fairly. Because how can you really say that this is gerrymandered? Like, what is the definition of a district that is fair? You know, is it fair if Democrats win? Is it fair if Republicans win? How do you do that? And until that can come up, I'm going to vote on the side of those conservatives who say we shouldn't review it. And that man's name was Anthony Kennedy. Anthony Kennedy, still on that court. Many of the others I just mentioned aren't. But the lines are basically the same. And the question in the Wisconsin case is, have there been a, is there basically a now developed mechanism in which to judge if a district has been gerrymandered? And there are some political scientists, and the plaintiffs are presenting this theory that they have come up with one. And it is called the efficiency. Well, here, I'll tell you what it is. It is the efficiency gap. And it was developed by Nicholas Stephanopoulos. I don't know if he's any related to anybody. From the University of Chicago Law School. And Eric McGee of the Public Policy Institute of California. And what they do is they attempt to calculate the wasted votes in a district. And the way that they calculate wasted votes are the ones that don't help a party's candidate to victory. So if the Democrats draw the districts and they spread the Republican voting base among so many districts that the party lacks a viable majority in any one district, right? So you have three districts. One is 60% Republican. The other two are 20% Republican. If you split up that 60% district so that all three are 40%, Republicans can never win, right? I'm simplifying, but that's basically it. Assume the rest are Democrats. Then those 40% votes in each one of those districts, They are wasted. They can never help a person win. And then the opposite is true. If you put all of the Republican, let's say you say, okay, we have a 60% Republican district and we have two other districts that are 20% Republicans. We're going to move those 20% Republicans or 30% Republicans in those other districts into the 60%. So that will be almost like 100%, 90% Republican district. And we can run Democratic candidates in the other two and we'll win those. And they would do that if it's, let's say, a 45-45 type of thing. That's how you measure the efficiency gap. When there is a certain percentage of votes that are wasted, but no more than that percentage. And they have chosen the number 7%. I'll return to that in a moment. But understand, the example I just gave is Democrats doing that. And that's not the case. We have multiple occasions where over the past 15 years or so, and particularly in the past six, where Democrats have won 60% of the vote, but only get 40% of the representatives because of the way the votes are distributed. I mean, we see this in the Electoral College, but the Electoral College was not massaged by states. I mean, that's just the way the chips fell. But you can see how you can win the majority of the votes and lose. But imagine if the states were drawn in such a way where we're going to put all the Democratic voters consciously into California. California is actually going to be the shape of California and then a very thin strip that goes across the country and encompasses New York. And that's going to be one district. And they're going to get X amount of electoral votes, and then the rest of the country is going to be another district. I mean, that's the equivalent of what's going on here. And so these political scientists have developed this theory of the efficiency gap. The one problem is how do you come up with that number? Like, what percent of wasted votes is fair? And they had an argument, I guess, in their paper that it was 8%. They have changed it to 7% in the context of their argument to the Supreme Court, and I don't know if that's enough to sway Anthony Kennedy. In fact, let me say, it's probably not. And once this gets the go-ahead, once the gloves are completely off in terms of partisan redistricting, the gloves will be completely off, and Republicans control this power. So this is implicating... It's implicating health care. And I got news for you. California can have single payer. And New York State could have single payer. And that's not going to convince a congressperson, a Republican congressperson, who's in Pennsylvania, sitting in a district that is reliably 57% Republican, because of redistricting. They just aren't going to care. I mean, right now in this John Ossoff race, all you hear coming out of, like, you know, the pundits is like, the Republicans here are really frustrated that the Congress has yet to overturn Obamacare, that they haven't cut taxes, right? And this is the district where, like, these are supposedly the... And so it's depressing the Republican vote. So this court case is hugely important. And again, we see the implications of Neil Gorsuch. Because if it was Merrick Garland, it wouldn't matter where Anthony Kennedy is. In fact, he'd probably join the majority because that's just the type of guy he is.
Well, or you need to get somebody on the Supreme Court who had been personally in a gerrymandered district. That's the other way to get.
That's right, exactly.
Well, that's terrible. I had no idea. Yeah. He ran a gerrymandered district. See, I had no idea. I've learned all this stuff about Puerto Rican women as well. He's the Portman of the Supreme Court.
Yep. Speaking of Portman, Portman is one of those guys who could very well be one who doesn't vote for this this repeal and replace of Obamacare. And again, we will put on the website right now, and if we clip this, maybe we should clip this for YouTube, a link to our amendments. Is that what it is?
Yes.
It's part of Indivisible, I guess. And it's ouramendments.org, where you can suggest amendments for Democratic senators to offer to slow the process down. Here's a clip from Senate Minority Leader Chuckie Schumer.
Woke Schumer.
Woke Schumer. Now, ostensibly, he's asking for time for the public to scrutinize this secret bill that's going to wreak havoc on 1/6 of our economy and make lives significantly worse for at least 24 million people. And then I would argue also for an added, 30, 50, 70 million people who have employer-based insurance. He knows what the answer is to this request, but he's making McConnell say no to kill time.
But we have time, more than 10 hours, since this is a complicated bill, to review the bill. Will it be available to us and the public more than 10 hours before we have to vote for it? Since our leader has said, our Republican leader, that there'll be plenty of time for a process where people can make amendments, you need time to prepare those amendments.
I think we'll have ample opportunity to read and amend the bill.
Will it be more than 10 hours?
We'll have ample opportunity to read and amend the bill.
There you go.
Definitely go to that website. Tell you that there should be publicly subsidized plastic surgery for Ted Cruz, you know?
I mean,
enjoy yourself.
And what's fascinating here is you're seeing why process arguments barely have traction.
Right.
What they're doing in terms of process is just completely it's nuts. But you know what? When McConnell sits there and does this, all he has in his back pocket is, I'm the guy who denied the last president a Supreme Court pick by just pretending he didn't have it.
Yeah.
Just pretending he didn't have it.
Do you think that I care about running in a totally unopaque and excluded anti-democratic process? I guess I care about it just as much as blocking a president from getting a Supreme Court pick.
And he understands that the American public does not give a crap about process. Some will say they do, but they don't understand what it means, and that the media can't cover bad process. It's like doing a TV show about someone who's reading a book. You just can't, it's not, after the first 2 minutes, I get it. They're reading a book. I don't know what's going on. The process is not interesting. And so the Democrats, fortunately, have realized this too. And so they're gumming up the Senate with the hopes that when the bill is released and the CBO score is there, there's something substantive to argue about. Here is, and this is another example of it. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren on Facebook had a Q&A yesterday on healthcare. They're talking about the bill, but even still, they're having to do it hypothetically. And it's much harder to do this. So it's all about the bill that came out of the House. They can't talk about the bill that came out of the Senate because nobody knows what's in it.
Talk about today with you, because we invite your questions, is the crisis in healthcare right now and what the Republicans are doing. And there are two main areas that I want to chat about briefly before I give the mic over to Elizabeth. And that is, number one, healthcare today constitutes about 1/6 of the American economy. Obviously, it is an issue that impacts every single American. And we can disagree about healthcare. I have my views. Elizabeth and I share a lot of views together. Other people have different points of view. It is hard for me to understand how any member of the United States Senate thinks it is acceptable to go forward without any open debate on the Republican Senate proposal. Elizabeth and I are both on the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee. Elizabeth, how many hearings and discussions have we had regarding the current Republican Senate proposal on health care?
Zero.
Zero.
None.
None. Okay.
None.
So an issue dealing with 1/6 of the American economy impacting hundreds of millions of people, zero hearings. The reason for that is fairly obvious. If you have something that you are proud of, if you have something that you think will do the American people some good, you know what? You want to get that word out,
yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
But if you have something that stinks to high hell,
yeah.
That will decimate the lives of many millions of people, you want to keep it as secret as possible.
This is about cutting taxes. This is not a health care bill. This is a tax cut bill. And the only way they can pass this tax cut bill is through reconciliation, which involves 50 votes, 51 votes. And the only way they can use reconciliation is if this is deficit neutral. So to cut taxes, they have to cut services. And it just so happens there's this big service out there called the Affordable Care Act, Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And that's what they're going to cut because that's what their constituents want.
I always bring this up. Several weeks ago, we played this clip when I was hosting of Paul Ryan's tax advisor. And it was one of these clips that a certain kind of like centristy pundit loves to grab because they're like, oh, see, there's still sane Republicans. Because the story at that time was that this was before the House passed health care when they had failed. And the report from the White House was Trump just wanted to drop it and do a tax cut because it would be more popular and easy to pass. And Ryan's guy at a forum in D.C. was like, that's unicorn thinking. We can't have tax cuts without dealing with health care. And people jumped on it like, oh, that's so great of him to have a reasonable cover.
Right.
And it was like, no, he's actually showing you the sociopathic intentions of these people, which is that, no, step by step. First, we decimate the social safety net, throw millions off of health insurance and into poverty, and then we give money to rich people.
Well,
it wasn't a moment, and he's right, but it wasn't like a moment of rational enlightenment.
No, it wasn't.
He was showing you their strategy
how it works. It was a practical prescription.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You can't cut taxes without cutting the services because we don't have enough votes to do it
right.
The way that you're talking about.
It must be really bad, too, for Bernie to share a platform with a woman.
That's hard.
Because he's such a, like, all right, I'll sit with Elizabeth and pretend I care about
her
opinion.
I keep saying, this is not a health care bill. This is a tax cut bill. And here is why. These reporters from Vox went and asked Republicans in the Senate, what are you trying to do with this bill? Right? It's ostensibly a health care bill. They cannot cut taxes. Without the votes, they need to do it through reconciliation. You can't do it through reconciliation in the Senate unless it's deficit neutral. So you must cut something. And for them, Medicaid, essentially, and other provisions of the Affordable Care Act are the easiest things to cut. Why do we attack Iraq? Because that's what everybody agreed upon. It was the easiest thing we could have done, as Thomas Friedman said. And the idea is not to fix healthcare. Exhibit A, Tara Gulshan from Vox interviewing John McCain. Vox, generally, what are the big problems this bill is trying to solve? John McCain, almost all of them. They're trying to get to 51 votes. Vox, Tara Gulshan, policy-wise, what are the problems in the American healthcare system this is trying to solve? And is that bill doing this right now? John McCain, well, it's whether you have full repeal, whether you have partial repeal, whether you have the basis of it. It's spread all over. Tara Gulshan, no, but based on the specifics of the bill you've heard so far, is it solving the problems in the healthcare system? John McCain, what I hear is we have not reached consensus. That's what everybody knows. Tara Gulshan. Right, but outside of getting the votes, from what you hear of the actual legislation being written, is it solving the problems you see? It's not being written because there's no consensus. But generally speaking, what are the big problems it's trying to solve? You name it. Everything from the Repeal Caucus, which, as you know, have made their views very clear, Rand Paul, etc. And then there are the others on the other side of the spectrum that just want to make minor changes to the present system. There's not consensus.
Minor changes to the present system.
In other words,
that is the most disingenuous thing he said in the whole exchange.
Well, there are some people who are basically in favor of, like, well, let's just call it Trump care.
Well, Collins and Murkowski maybe, but that's not something that's really on the table.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, that's what I meant by disingenuous. That's not happening.
But the point of this is he can't even answer what the problem is with the existing thing and what this legislation is aiming to fix. Because it's a tax cut. Jeff Stein from Vox talks to Chuck Grassley. I want to ask you a very broad question. What do you think this health care will accomplish that will improve America? What's the positive case for this bill? Grassley. Well, I can tell you what it's going to do for Iowa. We are one of those states that in a couple of weeks, if the insurer Medica pulls out, we'll have 94 of our 95 counties won't have any insurance, even for people who have the subsidies. That's what we have to concentrate on now. So at least Grassley now is stating, like, hey, there's a problem. Here's the problem. So Jeff Stein says, how do you think that bill will fix that problem? Grassley, well, by bringing certainty to the insurance market. They don't have certainty now. Stein, by bringing certainty to the insurance market? What certainty? Grassley, what? What do you mean by certainty? Well, they can't even file. They have to check the rates real high if they don't know what the government policy is. And so the certainty is that passing a bill gives the health insurance companies certainty. Jeff Stein, but wouldn't not passing a bill also do that? No, it gives them certainty that you'll have a lot higher rates than if you pass the bill. So you're saying the bill will lower rates?
Oh, no, no.
If you're talking about lowering the rates from now down, no. The rates could go be way up here. And if we get a bill passed, it maybe wouldn't go up or would go up a heck of a lot less than they would without a bill. By rates, you're talking about premiums. Yeah. Premiums.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have to go.
I can see why they want to ban reporters from the halls.
The reason why rates are going through the roof now is because the president keeps threatening to cut off subsidies, which is not to say there aren't affordability problems with the Affordable Care Act. Without a doubt, massive ones, that public options would certainly help mitigate to some extent. But the idea that the Affordable Care Act, that this is going to be improvement on the Affordable Care Act, nobody's even making that case. Because this is a tax cut. Period. End of story. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to head into the fun half. We'll take your phone call, 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. Folks, go to our website, find the post for the day. We're going to put it in the...
It's on the blog post. I guess I could...
Put it in the podcast descriptions. Yeah, just okay, write it out. Then, don't hyperlink it.
Yeah, I was going to tell people. When things are linked to, in general, in the podcast descriptions, there's always things for you to cut and paste because we don't put hyperlinks in them. So just as a general rule of thumb.
And also, fivecalls.org, you should write down too, where you can call your senators. And last week we had you call your Democratic senators and say, gum up the works. If you did make that call, good. If you didn't, or if you did, call them and say, thank you. Reward good behavior. These politicians
don't give a fuck about you.
Politicians don't give a fuck about you. They don't. I mean, I got news for you. Your dog cares about you because after a while, they know that you feed them, and then they think they love you. And maybe they do, but politicians They're the type of dogs that if somebody else puts out a bull down the street and it's a better bull, they'll go down there. So you just have to keep providing them some measure of sustenance.
Inspiration Hour with Sam Cedar.
There you go.
A bright perspective on life, politics, and how we get things done.
It's true.
Everyone's like dogs, and you just got to give them nibbles because they'll go somewhere else.
Well,
that's what I tell my kids.
At the very least, I tell my kids.
Love is just a cover for biological self-interest, do you see? Anyways, you want some cheese snacks now, son?
Guys, you don't have a crush on that boy or girl, okay? What it is that biologically we're set up to reproduce.
You're just a collection of genes, and there's something about the pheromones of that girl that you're responding to. It's not too complicated. Anyway, shut up. Call the amendment website. Stop worrying about it.
St. Valentine was a self-propagator advocate. That's all.
Politicians are like dogs.
646-257-3920 is the number. We'll take your phone calls. Folks, your support makes this show possible. If you have the financial means to support this program, it is the best way to make sure that we stick around. We get 96.3%, I made that up, of our revenue from members. And like you, not even like you, you. And if you, and as a way of saying thank you, we give you some extra material every day. And if you are one of those people who wants the extra material but don't have the financial means, please send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will take care of you. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. If you buy your crap from Amazon or Jet.com, go to our page, MajorityReportKickback.com. We've got links there. You click on those links. You buy your stuff through it. You'll notice no difference. We'll be right back after this.
Looking back.